Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Friday, August 23rd. I'm Lisa Music reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Mendocino Planning Commission recommends against legalizing small commercial campgrounds. Shelter Cove Brewery left waiting on $3,600 payment after fundraiser. And Mad River Hospital set to suspend labor and delivery services this fall. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. Mad River Community Hospital has announced that it will suspend its labor and delivery services in October 2024. Until then, the hospital will continue to provide these services for both scheduled and unscheduled deliveries. However, this suspension will not impact other gynecological services, such as hysterectomies, laparoscopies, and tubal ligations, which the hospital will continue to offer. Douglas Shaw, CEO of Mad River Community Hospital, acknowledged the difficulty of the decision. Quote, "This is one of the hardest decisions I've made in my tenure as CEO," end quote, Shaw said. He noted that while Mad River has been a leading provider of labor and delivery services in Humboldt County for many years, a significant decline in birth volumes over the past 4 years has made the service financially unsustainable. The hospital, which once averaged more than 60 births per month, is now performing fewer than 25 births monthly, leading to a seven-figure annual loss. Shaw cited several factors contributing to the decision, including inadequate reimbursement rates under Medi-Cal, unfunded mandates for seismic compliance, and other challenges faced by rural healthcare providers. He emphasized that the continuation of labor and delivery services would jeopardize the hospital's overall viability. Mad River Community Hospital is working with local hospitals and clinic providers to ensure a smooth transition and to absorb the labor and delivery volume. Chief Nursing Officer Melissa Long noted that the hospital is working to transfer its labor and delivery staff to other areas within the hospital. Quote, "We have many talented staff members that can be utilized in other important departments as we continue to grow," she said. Turning to Mendocino, the Planning Commission rejected proposed zoning changes on August 15th that would have legalized small commercial campgrounds on various types of land, citing the need for more public input before reconsideration. KZYX's Elise Cox reports.
The Planning Commission met last Thursday morning and decided to recommend against proposed changes to the zoning ordinance that would legalize small commercial campgrounds on residential, agricultural, and rural land, as well as on rangeland, forest land, and timberland, and open space, community land, and public facilities.
I know that the transient housing, the low-impact camping issue is the issue that seems to be of the most concern. So that it's clear, this body is going to be making, well, I will likely be making a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors to not adopt those regulations as a part of the zoning code update, but rather to hear those separately as their own item at a date later, either this calendar year or early next.
That's Clifford Paulin, a planning commissioner for District 1. The commissioners did decide to remove the camping language from the inland zoning update, but not before hearing some emotional testimony.
I'm not good at this, but Gail Richard from Fort Bragg. Okay, I'm really against this, and this is one of the reasons why. Okay, when I bought my home 25 years ago, I bought it with peace of mind and serenity of the area outside the city limits. My home is surrounded by large pieces of property, beautiful trees, and wildlife. This spot was selected for my peace of mind as I suffer from PTSD and depression. Something I must have for my mental health is peace and quiet. The neighborhood hoods are mostly older people who go to bed early and rise early. We respect the respect for each other, peace of, and quiet. People who, I'm sorry. We respect the respect for each other's peace and quiet. There isn't even a barking dog. We prefer it that way. What this board is considering will bring nothing but chaos and problems to our neighborhoods.
The creation of unpermitted, unlicensed commercial campgrounds throughout Mendocino County has been made possible by HipCamp, a San Francisco company that handles marketing and billing through a digital platform. HipCamp makes a profit from each HipCamp it hosts on its platform, and its business is more profitable the more HipCamps it hosts because its variable costs are close to zero. The beauty of this business model is that the real costs, the infrastructure costs, are offloaded onto the county or to the neighbors who suffer nuisance activity and wear and tear on the private roads where most of these HipCamps are located and which neighbors rely on.
The commission's reasons for recommending against low-intensity camping provisions at this time are as follows. A, additional time is needed to hear comments from emergency service providers, especially fire districts. B, concern that separate regulations may be necessary for the western portion of the county that, while governed by the Inland Zoning Code, is generally seen as being part of the Mendocino Coast, which generally has greater demand for transient habitation. C, there was disagreement over what parcel sizes and zoning districts are an appropriate fit for low-intensity camping, and what kind of property setbacks would minimize disruption of neighbors. D, campsites create numerous impacts that affect adjacent parcels that are not fully addressed by the proposed ordinance provisions. These impacts include noise and light and glare that affect neighbors, and the potential for degradation of private roads by increased traffic related to low-intensity camping. E, campsites require adequate water supply, sewage disposal, and solid waste disposal for the health and safety of those camping. Additional operational requirements to speak to these issues were desired, but additional time is necessary to develop solutions and hear public comment.
That's Mendocino Planning Director Julia Krog. One thing to note is that the demand for HipCamps from both campers and Mendocino property owners appears to be quite low. According to HipCamp, just 80 property owners in Mendocino County offer transient rentals through its site. An analysis from KZYX found just 70 properties listed. Many of these properties are large properties, think tens or hundreds of acres. And many of these properties also offer lodging, think an Airbnb. Our analysis showed just 10 properties that were 5 acres or less and that offered tent and RV camping, and just 8 properties that were a little bigger that were between 5 and 10 acres. When evaluating the economic impact, it's important to know that visitors staying at HipCamps make up just 0.5% of all visitors to Mendocino and contribute only about $60,000 in TOT taxes, the transient occupancy tax, assuming that's paid by all 80 property owners. For KZYX News, I'm Elise Cox.
In state news, California human rights advocates call on Governor Gavin Newsom to take action and limit what they describe as the harmful practice of solitary confinement in jails, prisons, and private immigration detention facilities. Eun Chan from KPFA brings you the details.
Governor Newsom, hear our voice!
And solitary is your choice!
And solitary is your choice! Dozens of human rights advocates and solidarity survivors gathered in front of the California State Capitol in Sacramento and called on Governor Gavin Newsom to sign AB 280, also known as the California Mandela Act. It's a bill that will limit solidarity confinement for all prisoners to 15 consecutive days or no more than 20 days in a two-month span. It would also ban solidarity confinement for pregnant women, people with mental and physical disabilities, and anyone younger than 26 or older than 59. Hamid Yazdanpanah is an immigration attorney and the advocacy director for Immigrant Defense Advocates. It is an immigrant rights advocacy group that is part of the California Mandela Campaign. He said in a rally today that the campaign started in 2022, but Newsom vetoed a similar bill that would have regulated solidarity confinement.
Governor Newsom vetoed it and said this issue is ripe for reform. One more time, ripe for reform. What happened? He waited a whole year, didn't do anything. The week that was the last week to sign legislation, CDCR then put out regulations. Why? Because he wants to use those regulations not for reform, but to block change.
After Newsom vetoed the bill in 2022, the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, or CDCR, put out emergency regulations to address the issue. Inmates in solidarity confinement are now allowed to spend at least 20 hours a week outside their cells, but advocates say that's far from enough. Jessica Solis is a formerly incarcerated community member. She said she was placed in solidarity confinement at the age of 13. She says she didn't have a toilet or running water, and she had to beg the staff to let her go to the restroom. She described solidarity confinement as torture.
Solitary confinement is designed to break you. It's designed to make you go crazy. It's designed to kill you because the majority of the people there kill themselves because they can't handle it. And if you want to make a change, Governor Newsom, then you could stop this torture, the torture that's still going on every single day.
Eric Harris is the director of public policy from Disability Rights California. He says solidarity confinement is not just a prison rights issue, but also a disability rights issue because many of his community members have mental disabilities caused by solidarity confinement.
I know that there's data. I know that there is a lot of information to say if you're in solitary confinement, you obtain this and you might get this, and maybe you had mental health disabilities before or you obtain it after you're in. We've talked to individuals, we've worked with individuals who've said repeatedly, this is what I have because of solitary confinement. Solitary confinement is torture, and solitary confinement needs to end now.
AB 280 passed the Senate floor in September of 2023. It is currently pending in the State Assembly and waiting for a concurrence vote. For KPFA News, I'm Yun Chen.
Jibbo Ale Mill, a Shelter Cove brewery, is still awaiting a $3,600 payment nearly a year after hosting a fundraiser, highlighting the ongoing issues with ticket hosting site Brown Paper Tickets. Julie Peacock, owner of Jibbo Ale Mill, spoke with KMUD News regarding the money owed for the 2023 Fresh Hops Festival, held to benefit KMUD Radio.
We've used Brown Paper Ticket in the past to, like, hospice fundraisers, different things like that. I guess so. We've always used them in the past so that you could purchase your tickets online. And so we used them for our 2023 Lost Coast Fresh Hop Festival. It was here in Shelter Cove, and it was a fundraiser for KMUD. And so when I'm looking back at our stats, we sold 92 tickets, and it was $3,600 that we raised. Normally, the money would just be deposited in your account like 6 days after the end of the event.
But the ticket proceeds minus Brown Paper Tickets fees were never deposited into Jibbo's bank account. After the expected payment date came and went, Peacock attempted to reach out to Brown Paper Tickets, a feat that proved difficult and eye-opening.
I went to go email them, and then it's like when I started kind of to see, like, there's something weird going on here, because I couldn't, when you go to the website and you try to get help, if you try to look for a phone number, then it's like, oh, we're not taking phone calls anymore. And so then we would send the email, and then there was no response, and it just kind of kept happening. And then that's when I started kind of digging around and was like, uh-oh, this is really bad.
Internet sleuthing alerted Peacock of other event hosts also facing the same issue of non-payment. Despite a $9 million settlement in 2021 aimed at resolving widespread payment delays, the ticketing platform continues to leave event organizers unpaid, even after being acquired by Events.com in 2022. The event's beneficiary, KMUD, Redwood Community Radio, is also out the time, energy, and money as the event's co-sponsor. KMUD's interim station manager, Sarah Stark.
So we didn't receive our portion because she didn't get her portion. So it's just kind of trickled down.
The payment that BPT is holding are online ticket purchases bought to support KMUD. KMUD, like most nonprofits, relies heavily on fundraisers for a large portion of their operating fund. Brown paper tickets withholding of funds raised by the community especially impacts the nonprofit as it faces rising costs.
I think that it's really important when the community shows up to support KMUD in such a way that they're knowing that KMUD gets the money, and to have it be held up by a corporate entity feels very anti-Southern Humboldt. And, you know, we are solid. We have no debt. We own the building. We are getting more donations. The donations are actually up. Our problem here is that inflation is more than that, and our bills are going up. So far, we've been able to maintain that, but it has been tricky because we are always asking for money, and it's the nature of being a nonprofit and having our bills go from $40,000 a month last year to $45,000 to almost $48,000 this year a month. Like, that's a huge increase. That's been hard to keep up with, and it doesn't always feel good to be asking for money every single second and feel like we're always leaning on the community. So to have an event like this not pay us what could pay a few bills, that does not feel good. So it does come back full circle to every little bit does count, and we need it because of our expenses increasing.
Brown Paper Tickets, once a trusted platform for small events, has seen a significant decline in its reputation following the pandemic and subsequent payment reliability issues.
I don't know what the circumstances are, but I feel like Brown Paper Tickets, I always thought was this kind of cool thing where you could use this platform to run your tickets through, and it made it simple for someone to put on an event and made sense. Come to find out, they sold out and now they're corporate and they're not paying people money, which is, you know, not an okay thing to do.
A thread started in 2022 on Reddit titled "Warning: Brown Paper Tickets Continues to Steal from Theater Companies" has similar accounts of event hosts left waiting for payment from BPT, the one-time go-to ticket hosting site for smaller events that were attracted to BPT for the lower fees. The Reddit commenters said they were owed anywhere from $500 to $8,000 in unpaid ticket sales. Events.com, which acquired BPT, has promised to stabilize operations and ensure all outstanding payments were made by March 31st, 2024. Despite these assurances, Jibbo Elmill and other organizations are still waiting. Peacock expressed her frustration, noting,
I don't know that we'll be able to do it again this year. It's just not very inspiring when you're like, I'm losing money to put this event on because I'm not even getting paid.
Jibbo and KMUD are still awaiting funds from the event that both entities dedicated time, money, and energy into, only to have BPT hold the funds that event goers believed would be benefiting their local radio station.
That's kind of where we're at right now, is just waiting on payment. We got an email, I think in March, that said that they were going to pay us, and yeah, still nothing.
The lack of payment from BPT is a double whammy, Peacock said, as the annual event was not as big of a success as it had been in the past amid the Southern Humboldt economic downturn caused by the collapse of the cannabis industry, already impacting both Jibbo and KMUD.
It's just because it's a really hard time in our community financially. So I don't even know that we broke even even with like the amount of that, because putting on events is just very expensive. And so it's just like a double whammy, I guess. Like, not only did we barely break even, we were hardly able to even give Cayman like much of a donation like we've had in the past for this event. And then also not even getting the money to pay for the event. It's a bummer, but luckily everybody at Cayman is really incredibly kind to us.
The feelings are mutual. Though the delay in BPT funds has impacted both JIPO and KMUD, the two entities expressed appreciation and support of one another.
I do want to say that I am extremely grateful to Julie and to JIPO AOMIL for always being supportive of KMUD. They are in many ways continually supportive, not just this one event, but an ongoing relationship. And this has certainly been an unfortunate situation for them, probably even more so than for KMUD.
This story was published on our sister site, Redheaded Black Belt, earlier today. Around 4:20 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, Brown Paper Tickets responded to the article with the following comment. Quote, "Hello. This article was brought to our attention and we looked into this account. We have located this account and it is part of the final set of groups slated for upcoming payments as part of the last phase of the Events.com acquisition. We expect the payment issuance to be initiated no later than Wednesday of next week, August 28th. We understand the acquisition of Brown Paper Tickets by Events.com took time. We apologize for the delay and look forward to a successful resolution for you. When Events.com initially agreed to acquire Brown Paper Tickets, it was a condition of the acquisition that, over time, all outstanding payments owed by Brown Paper Tickets event organizers would be paid in full. With this last set of payments forthcoming, Brown Paper Tickets will have completed its commitment. With support from Events.com's subsidiary, Brown Paper Tickets has successfully paid over $70 million to event organizers worldwide since January 1st, 2020. We appreciate your patience and understanding throughout this process. Signed, the Brown Paper Tickets team." KMUD News reached out to both Peacock and Stark to share the comment made by Brown Paper Tickets. We will update our listeners as this story develops. Groups that promote reentry for people who have served time behind bars are calling attention to new rules that will improve and expand the process for people to get old criminal convictions expunged from their record. Suzanne Potter reports.
Starting October 1st, it will get a lot easier for people with old felony convictions to get them expunged from their record as Senate Bill 731, passed 2 years ago, is fully implemented. Before, only records from 2005 or later could be cleared, but now the law covers records from as far back as 1973. Sam Huff is with the nonprofit Shields for Families in South L.A.
It's estimated that an additional 4.5 million people will have felony records that are now eligible for expungement.
Advocates of criminal justice reform spoke out in Sacramento on Wednesday to raise awareness as part of the Time Done Day of Advocacy. The law also allows petitions for expungement to now be filed at your local courthouse, and the State Department of Justice will start conducting automated petitions. A website called expungemyrecord.org just launched this week to help people navigate the process. Huff says clearing your record of old convictions can vastly improve a person's chances of getting a job, renting an apartment, obtaining a professional license, and more.
You know, it allows for the opportunity to coach your children's Little League. It allows for the opportunity to be members of your HOA board. And it just really allows for full participation into your community.
People can petition to have many types of non-sexual felony convictions expunged 2 years after completing any parole or probation, as long as they have no new offenses. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Pro-Palestine activists asked to intervene in a lawsuit that could affect the rights of UC Berkeley students to protest. KPFA's Emmy Burris reports.
Pro-Palestine student activists and community members filed a motion today to intervene in the Brandeis Center's lawsuit against UC Berkeley. In their motion, they allege that the lawsuit falsely classifies the actions of pro-Palestinian activists as anti-Semitic. Ronald Cruz is the attorney for the Coalition to Defend Affirmative Action, Integration, and Immigrant Rights, and Fight for Equality by Any Means Necessary, known as BAM. Cruz said at a press conference on the steps of UC Berkeley's administration building that the lawsuit targets students protesting and conflates anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism.
Their lawsuit is based on the central lie that criticism of this present extreme ultra-right-wing government of Israel is anti-Semitic, which it is not.
The Brandeis Center sued UC Berkeley last November, shortly after the war in Gaza began. The center's website says it advocates for the rights of Jewish people. The lawsuit was filed against UC Berkeley, Berkeley Law School, UC President Michael Drake, and UC Berkeley Chancellor Carol Christ, with the center claiming that they are spreading anti-Semitism. Zaid Youssef is a Muslim Palestinian American seeking to become a defendant intervener in the Brandeis lawsuit. He is the president of the Muslim Student Association and the Muslim Law Student Association at UC Berkeley. He said that students in his associations have seen a rise in hate and a lack of support from the administration, and he wants to be a part of the case because he has no faith in the UC system or the Berkeley Law Dean, Erwin Cherminsky, to defend the rights of students protesting for Palestine.
I do not trust a man who denies genocide and denies the massacre of 40,000 of my people to defend my free speech. I do not trust that an administration that has allowed Islamophobia to go unanswered for on this campus to stand for Palestinians. And I most certainly do not trust a dean whose wife assaulted a hijabi student in his own backyard to stand for my freedom of speech. It is for these very reasons that we must be allowed to intervene in this lawsuit.
According to Ronald Cruz, Dean Cherminsky has threatened to punish student law journals that express solidarity with Palestinians. Cruz also said that UC President Michael Drake announced that face masks will be prohibited at some pro-Palestine rallies, as well as a new zero-tolerance policy for pro-Palestinian encampments.
It is unprecedented for this top-down dictatorial policy like this to go forward, and would represent the biggest crackdown on free speech rights since the McCarthy era.
Adam Lerman is a Jewish leader of BAM. Now that their motion has been filed, Lerman said that they will be speaking about this case anywhere that will have them.
We intend to build a statewide and national movement around this case to defend the rights of the movement for Palestine and to defend Jewish students and Jewish advocates' rights to decide for ourselves what Judaism and Zionism mean.
Now that pro-Palestine advocates have motioned to intervene in the suit, the court must respond in 14 days. The proposed defendant interveners will have 7 days after that to reply.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Wild Ginger, and thanks to our reporters, Elise Cox, Eun Chan, and Emmy Burris. KMA News is online. You can find us on kmud.org, SoundCloud, Instagram, and Facebook. That's where you can see related stories, links, and videos. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting from the KMUD studio in Redway, I'm Lisa Music.